It's Thursday, time for the Chico News and Review, local news and arts from Butte County's community newspaper on the radio. Hey, Butte County, Jason Cassidy here, interim editor of the Chico News and Review. Thanks for tuning into the show this week. We are here every Thursday, 5:30 p.m., right after the Butte Report with Sue Hildebrand on the Zephyr, KZFR, 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. For the bulk of today's show, we're going to be talking to CNR writer Ken Smith about Butte County District Attorney Mike Ramsey's recent press conference in which he cleared Chico police officers involved in the shooting death of Stephen Vest last October. But first, an update on the COVID-19 pandemic. On January 11th in Butte County and on January 25th across California, regional coronavirus stay-at-home orders were lifted as ICU capacities increased above 15%. The moves returned the state to the Blueprint for a Safer Economy guidelines, under which Butte County remains in the purple or widespread tier, the most restrictive distinction for counties. With average daily case rates as 7 per 100,000 or greater. As of January 26, Butte's rate was at 37.1 new COVID-19 cases per day. With the return to the purple tier, there's been some loosening of public restrictions. Restaurants are allowed to open outdoor dining with modifications, and people are allowed to gather outdoors. You can visit COVID-19, that's COVID, the numeral 19.ca.gov for the list of open and restricted activities and businesses. As for vaccinations, it's complicated. California is in phase one of its COVID-19 vaccine rollout, which overall covers those in high-risk categories. There are three general subsections under phase one, A, B, and C, and each subsection is further divided into tiers. Butte County is currently administering vaccines to all tiers of phase 1A, plus a few areas in tier number one under phase 1B. In addition to healthcare workers and those in long-term care facilities, those currently eligible for vaccines include community and at-home health workers, education workers, and residents 75 and over. Vaccinations are given by invitation only. No appointments are currently being offered. However, those who fall into any of the high-risk categories under Phase 1 can sign up with the county to be alerted when their group is getting its shots. Visit www.buttecounty.net/ph/COVID-19/vaccine to see which groups are included in Phase 1 and to sign up for notification. There is no schedule for when vaccinations for the general public will be available. Estimates range from spring to early summer.
Based upon all of that facts and the law, it was clear the officers that night had an objectively reasonable belief that they and the citizens they were sworn to protect were in imminent danger of death or great bodily harm under the totality of the circumstances. And as such, under those facts and the law, I find the shooting to be justified. And there would be no further activity going forth. I note death of a citizen in our community, particularly one with as many life difficulties as had been experienced by Mr. Best, homeless for some time, is tragic for both him and his family.
That was District Attorney Mike Ramsey at a January 14th press conference where he announced that Chico Police Sergeant Nicholas Bauer and Officer Tyler Johnson were justified in the October 15th shooting of Stephen Vest, a 30-year-old man who died of his injuries in the parking lot in front of Petco in Chico. In an expansive story on the Chico News Review website, writer Ken Smith reported on the Vest shooting, as well as results of a Butte County officer-involved shooting, critical incident protocol team's investigation, and the response of local police watchdog groups that disagree with the DA's findings, both in this case and in many previous cases where officer-involved shootings have resulted in death.
All right, Ken Smith is with us here. He wrote a story about District Attorney Ramsey's decision, as well as stories before that on the officer-involved shooting of Stephen Vest. He joins us now. Ken, can you tell us a little bit about what led up to the events there in front of Petco?
Yeah, absolutely. On the evening of October 15th, it began with a father calling 911 reporting that a man with blood on him was brandishing a knife and had chased his daughter, his 15-year-old daughter, at the tennis courts at a community park on 20th Street. And that was followed up with an altercation between Vest and a security guard who tased Vest at one point. Kind of carried through the intersection of 20th Street and Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard there. Vest reportedly by, you know, a lot of motorists who witnessed the situation said he was, you know, acting very erratically and scaring people, trying to get into cars and tried to climb on the back of a motorcycle. And then moved over towards the Petco building there at that would be the southeast corner of that intersection. And chased a Petco employee and a truck driver who were offloading a truck in a loading dock there on the MLK side of the building. Chased him into a hallway. That's when police officers arrived, initially pursued him into the loading dock and started down the hallway, telling him to drop his weapon. And then decided to move to the front of the building to evacuate employees there, according to Ramsey's narrative presented at the press conference.
He's holding a knife at this point.
Yeah, holding a knife. So police moved to the front of the building, the front door of Petco there, and the two men who Vest was pursuing ran out and towards the officers. Vest walked out, turned to face the officers and moved towards them. It's all seen there on body cam footage from two of the officers at the scene. He's tased again by a police officer, doesn't stop. And there's roughly, 8 seconds from him walking outside the door and being yelled at to drop his weapon to police officers discharging their weapons. Two of the officers shot him several times and he crumpled over and died at the scene. I guess initially there was a pulse. It's strange listening to Ramsey give the narrative because these press conferences, this one lasted about 2.5 hours. Yeah. And so it's very much a blow by blow, second by second. And it's hard to realize until you watch the entire footage that this, at least the part of the police officers arriving at Petco, witnessing Vest running into the building, that, it all took place in 50 seconds, which is just insane, less than a minute.
About how long before he entered the Petco building did the police get calls about him in Community Park?
Let's see, I don't have my notes in front of me, but I believe there was roughly a half hour or so.
Okay.
From the first reports of him acting erratically. So there was a longer prelude at the park too. He also interacted with, I believe, some people in a van. It's altogether a pretty harrowing story for sure. And
Ramsey, DA Ramsey absolved the police officers of any wrongdoing in this, but there's been a huge response from community organizations and activists, concerned citizens for justice for one. You talked with Margaret Swick and George Gold of that organization, and they have a different take on the events than Ramsey. What was their impression of how police responded?
I think through all of the police shootings that we've had in Butte County over the last several years, there is the constant question from a lot of members of the public and, of course, these police watchdogs, which is, this person did, or question or statement rather, this person didn't have to die. And, some of the questions are, why wasn't a better, more de-escalation used. Ramsey countered that in the rapidly developing situation with Vest advancing with a knife, he wasn't responding to anything, so they couldn't use de-escalation techniques. But still, you know, George Gold makes some good points about during our conversation about other less lethal methods that could be used to subdue a person. I mean, you know, we have these kind of instances happen in prisons and mental hospitals daily, and we don't hear about, you know, orderlies killing people or prison guards even, because, you know, they're mostly equipped with non-lethal methods to subdue people. And, you know, I remember speaking to the mother of somebody who was killed by the sheriff's department a few years back. And she said, you know, if my son were an animal, they would have tranquilized him. You know, they would have hit him with a needle or threw a net on him. Instead, they, you know, shot him multiple times.
And part of the issue with this incident with Stephen Vest was that when the officers was going to use a non-lethal shotgun, but apparently there wasn't one in the vehicle.
Yeah, and that's something that I definitely would like to pursue further and find out. Because, Sergeant Bauer, who was one of the officers who fired, initially reached for the shotgun loaded with beanbags, which is a non-lethal method.
For those of you just joining us, you're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR. We're talking to writer Ken Smith about his current story on the CNR website about the police shooting of Stephen Vest on October 13th. Next, Ken talks about some of the systemic issues and how the community failed this troubled young campfire survivor.
I mean, this is a person who was incarcerated multiple times, obviously displaying, you know, they call it flat-out psychosis, but in Ramsey's report, it's methamphetamine-induced psychosis. But I mean, that's still a state of mental illness. And I've also interviewed Vest's acquaintances and friends from growing up, and he was a troubled young man. Going back to childhood death of his father, just days after Christmas, through you know, growing up with his grandparents, he had a mother who suffered from mental illness and lived homeless on the streets of Chico, just like he ended up. And he ended up on the streets of Chico after his grandfather passed away. And so after his parents died, or his father rather, he'd been raised by his grandparents. That home was lost in the campfire. So, you know, he's an absolute campfire survivor. His condition, whether or not he had addiction issues before, they were definitely, at least from the people that I've spoken to, not as severe as they had become in his two years on the street. There's posts to Facebook from Stephen Vest himself where he expresses his frustration with trying to get help. And being made to feel like trash because he's reaching out for help. So I don't know. And also, I mean, you could say, I mean, was this a, you know, what they call death by blue or suicide by cop? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he was obviously determined in his, you know, approaching the officers with a knife. And also, which that in itself, or even stating that somebody, that he's suicidal, as he did several times, the grounds for a 5150, which is a mental health hold, are that, you know, you expressed intent to hurt yourself or others. He did this several times in the past. They said mental health services were offered to him, but, you know, that's actually like, fully meets the criteria to be hospitalized for, you know, initially 48 days and beyond that 3 weeks. And, you know, maybe something like that would have helped. So I also spoke to some mental health advocates, Lisa Currier, particularly, who points to that fact that Stephen Vest is sadly indicative of, you know, multiple failures in the system, not just law enforcement, but social services in general, and not to mention disaster response. And Stephen Vest's, the story of his downfall and death begins with the campfire.
This particular incident, like you said, and like it was reported in Ramsey's press conference, things happened really quick, and there are questions about how the police responded, but there's a history in Butte County of police responding to situations, or two other high profile shootings, Tyler Rushing and Desmond Phillips back in 2017, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's a lot of people who are rallying behind the memory of those two gentlemen for the circumstances around their deaths. And the Concerned Citizens for Justice was born in the wake of those two killings. What's the impetus for the organization? What are their concerns, and what is it that they're advocating for?
They have several issues that they pursue. They want emphasis on de-escalation techniques by police. They want citizen oversight of police. Another thing that, you know, they stated multiple times during my interview is that they want us as a society to properly care for our officers as well. You know, give them the techniques so that they don't have to make that decision to take a life, which haunts people, whether it's an officer or not. Now, some organizations, you know, call for the prosecution of involved officers. Whether you blame the officers personally, it's the system. It's the way that officers are trained. It's police culture. It's an emphasis on command and control. These are, you know, arguably outdated methods that we need to find a better way. Every system we have has switched from this kind of authoritative model to something better, except unfortunately policing is one of the last holdouts. You know, I mean, you see reform in mental health care, you see reform in education, whereas, you know, 40 years ago, schools more resembled a prison. But when it comes to policing, these organizations argue locally that these changes aren't being implemented, or the resources aren't being invested properly in better, more modern training that could result in saving lives.
For more on the story, find Ken Smith's feature, Police Shooting Justified, on the CNR website, chico.newsreview.com. You're listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR, and now it's time to talk about some art. And believe it or not, there is a lot of it to take in right now, despite the fact that the coronavirus is keeping the doors of our art spaces closed. As the lockdowns have dragged on, three of Chico's main galleries, the Chico Art Center, the Museum of Northern California Art, and the 1078 Gallery, have all adapted and moved their shows online. The Museum of Northern California Art, or MONCA, is still showing Selfie 2020, an exhibit about the self, in which Northern California artists were asked to submit work that reflected their answer to a set of questions about their life and their work during the pandemic. Questions like, have you changed physically, mentally? Is your mind going in another direction? Has your art taken on new life? The show is set to end at the beginning of February, and next up is Dream State, a group exhibit on dreams as a source of inspiration, which opens on February 4th. You can find out more at MONCA, MONCA.org. And on the other side of town, at 1078 Gallery, they have their annual Stories 9 show. This one features 8 artists with strong ties to Chico that are telling their stories through their art and their photography. Featured artists are John Baca, Sharon DeMeyer, Josh Oliveira, Lauren Ruth, Jason Clower, Sherry Simons, Judith Leinen, and Marilyn Walsh. In addition to the digital images of their pieces, the gallery has posted a wide range of videos, little miniature artist talks on the art and its inspiration. You can see it all at 1078, that's the numerals, 1078gallery.org. And at the Chico Art Center, they have their member showcase up right now, featuring works by gallery's members, as well as Birds of a Feather, a celebration of birds as a symbol of freedom and community. And for both of these exhibits, the center has implemented a really cool virtual gallery function where the viewer can move through the gallery and click on each piece for more information, such as a large, colorful abstract piece in the middle of one wall and oil, pastel, and wax painting by Christine Evans, and with an artist description that likens the painting to visual jazz. You can see it for yourself at chicoartcenter.com. And coming soon, over at Chico State, the Janet Turner Print Museum has a new exhibit opening on February 4th called Social Commentary, Prints and Politics, a virtual exhibit that explores the intersection of printmaking and politics and features a 360-degree video of the entire exhibit. Go to csuchico.edu/Turner. And the sound their money's making is exhausting and it stinks. Finish up the cocktail. Chico's favorite band is turning 30 this year. The Mother Hips naturally had wanted to celebrate the way that they do best with epic live shows throughout 2021, but those plans have been dashed by COVID. Thankfully, the band's label, Blue Rose, has stepped up to make sure the occasion gets appropriately recognized by re-releasing 9 of the band's albums on vinyl. Some of them were never put on vinyl in the first place, including the debut Back to the Grotto, and the limited release of that and its 2 follow-ups have already sold out. The rest can still be ordered at blue-rose-music.myshopify.com or visit the Mother Hips website, and you can enjoy Back to the Grotto live tomorrow evening, Friday, January 29th at 6 p.m., as the band gets together to perform the classic in its entirety. Find the boys on singer-guitarist Tim Bloom's Facebook page at facebook.com/TimothyBloom. Finally, a correction. On last week's show, I gave the wrong date for the next installment of Chico Performance's Chico Voices Virtual Series. Local groovy jazz soul crew, lo and behold, did not debut on the Laxton stage last Friday. They do tomorrow night, Friday, January 29th at 7 p.m. For more info on the show, including how to stream it, visit chicoperformances.com. Chico News and Review is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by C&A Cleaning, serving Chico, Paradise, Durham, and Oroville since 1989. Bonded and insured, C&A Cleaning offers regular and one-time residential and commercial cleaning services using environmentally friendly cleaning products. C&A Cleaning also offers ultrasonic blind cleaning. For more information or for employment opportunities, call C&A Cleaning at 514-7738. And by Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries, and supplements. The co-op has hot food, ready-to-eat sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. The co-op now accepts online orders for curbside pickup. Chico Natural Foods Co-op open every day on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. Thanks again for tuning in to the Chico News and Review Show. Thank you, KZFR 90.1 FM, for hosting us each Thursday at 5:30 p.m. Thank you, Mother Hips, for giving your blessing for us playing Hey Emily throughout today's program. And as always, thank you to Cat Depot for our theme music that opens and closes this show. And remember, look for the January print edition of the CNR on stands now and find the digital version at chico.newsreview.com. Take care.